And once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. If you are headed to this game against Colorado, make sure you head over to Tony's Diner to fraternize with other Goal Line Club members and, you know, just have a generally a good time.
Absolutely. Again, with a 2:30 kickoff, you'll have plenty of time to get down there. Have yourself maybe a nice adult beverage there at Tony. Maybe bring the kids. Again, breakfast, lunch, Goal Line Club member sounds like a fantastic opportunity, Luke.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you to Mike Sanford versus Joe Rossi week, the storyline that Justin Gard doesn't believe is real as the Colorado Buffaloes of the Pac-12 come into Huntington Bank Stadium at 2:30 this weekend. Luke, before we get into all things Gopher football related, how are you? How are things with you tonight?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. I had a long work day, and really this feels like it's going to be some therapy for me. Most things didn't seem to go particularly well today. A lot of times they do go well, but today just wasn't one of those days. So I'm excited to sit back, tip back a LaCroix, a peach plum. We should get them to advertise.
Boy, that's really a nice IPA for you right there.
Yeah, no, LaCroix, peach plum, carbonated water. And very excited to chat with you. And you know, I have been looking forward to the Rossi Bowl for some time. I always wanted it to be, or the Rossi Sanford Bowl. You know that I started this, right? It wasn't this, but it was a different incarnation. And I was really excited for the Rob Smith Kirk Sciarocco Bowl that never was, but then was via Penn State and Rutgers. So I'm hoping at some point we can get Duke on the schedule, so that we can get that true Rob Smith Kirk Sciarocco Bowl that I've been wanting for so long.
As much as I think this weekend could be on blowout, a Kirk Sciarocco versus a Rob Smith defense is even on an entirely another level, in my opinion, with how, again, that's a Rob Smith defense that, won a football game again in the Nerd Bowl last week. So it's interesting. By the way, the whole IPA thing with LaCroix. So there's an inside joke between me and my fiance, because I just tell all of our listeners about my life because it's the big introvert that I am. She loves LaCroix. So you and her share that. I have never understood carbonation. So here's my claim to fame.
So you don't like it? You like your water still and you don't light it like it's sparkling?
Oh, well, okay. Here's my claim to fame. I have never drank. I don't know at this stage. I've never drank a pop by itself. Like a can of pop, I have never drank by itself in my entire life. Now, I love a good like rum and diet or, you know, something like that where it mixes it in. But I can honestly say in my entire life, I have never had like a LaCroix. I've never had a Diet Coke, a Mountain Dew. Now, you can say, boy, that's so healthy of you. Well, Luke, I mean, you've seen me. I mean, I'm trying to lose weight for the wedding, but I don't know that 235 pounds at 6'4" is ideal. But am I strange for not liking the?
I know plenty of people that don't like carbonated beverages, and that's fine. I happen to like them. I think
I can have a beer. But in like that,
yeah,
doesn't
a different
bother
kind
me,
of carbonation.
I would argue beer just tastes like water, which I know I've already lost half the listeners on this podcast for some of these takes, and we're 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
But like, I think there's a difference to me between drinking a beer and drinking a Mountain Dew or something.
There are different kinds of carbonations in beverages, and there are certain that I like more than others. And I do like carbonated water. I also even like unflavored carbonated water. Call me weird, but I like it.
What's the attraction?
It's a good question.
Well, like I also know people in my family that like will drink still water, but put that flavored dye stuff in it to make it taste like something.
Yeah, I don't like that. I think the main thing for me is that like I like to have a carbonated water after I eat. I don't necessarily like it when I eat, if that makes sense. So I don't know if it's more of a digestion thing or like a gas related thing, but I don't know. I like carbonated water. It's good.
Huh.
All right.
Well, when I'm in the press box this weekend and I think about having what they have in the fridge is, by the way, and I hadn't seen one of these in a long time, a Mellow Yellow. I don't know. When was the last time you saw, like, at a gas station, a Mellow Yellow? But that's what that's the type of pop they serve out in the press box. I'll think of you this weekend, Luke. Not, I want you to know that.
Not a clue. I don't have any clue. Yeah. But no, I do. I really like sparkling water, and then I also I really like Coke. Those are my vices. I don't drink coffee though.
Coca-Cola we're talking about, right?
Yeah, Coca-Cola. Yeah, not the drug.
I don't want to assume in 2022, and I didn't know what you wanted to air out here on the podcast.
You know what they say about assumptions, Ryan. So, okay, let's get into this game. The Golden Gophers take on the Colorado Buffaloes on Saturday, September 17th at 2:30 Central Time. The Gophers are heavy favorites in this game, Ryan, and it's really not close. Colorado, let me just take us back to last year. Do you remember? I don't remember exactly the line, but the Gophers ended up winning that game by 30. But I think it was supposed to be almost a pick-em game, right? It was pretty close. I think the Gophers were maybe slightly favored. And since then, Colorado has just fallen from any kind of graceful standing they might have had.
Yes, I also want listeners to know I'm doing my best to not talk over Luke because I know we had a couple of people tweet me that I'm apparently like unlistenable now because I talk over people. So I'm trying to respect that and trying to change my best with a necktie mentality. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Minnesota was only – I don't know if it was a pick-em. I think Minnesota might have been like a few-point favorite.
I'll try to find it. But yeah, I think it was close.
Yeah, the fact that the line right now as we currently sit here in time early in the morning on Thursday or late – Wednesday night, depending upon where you are right now, Minnesota's a 4-touchdown favorite is mind-boggling, frankly, to me. Now, I know some of it's because Minnesota's looked so good. Some of it is because Colorado has looked completely inept, and Carl Dorrell is now on the hot seat out there as he's trying to fill Mel Tucker's shoes, and it just has not gotten any better. With Mike Sanford, who was supposed to be the magic fix for this offense, which I think some of us are listening to this thing, I am absolutely gobsmacked that Mike Sanford hasn't fixed the offense through 2 weeks. But to your point, Luke, it's wild that you look at the trajectory of these two teams since that game, and they have gone completely different directions. Both have new offensive coordinators, Colorado with Mike Sanford, Minnesota with Kirk Soraka, and I would argue it's pretty easy to tell here so far. Now, maybe because it's because of players, or we can discuss scheme too, potentially, and I'm sure we will here on this podcast, but I think Minnesota would take Kirk Soraka knowing all the things they know now.
All right, so I did look back at the spread. Actually, Colorado State was a 2.5-point favorite in that game.
Colorado.
Yep. They were a 2.5-point favorite in that game, which is it's just ironic because if you look at the spread now, Minnesota's a 27.5 favorite, and if you add those up, that was just the score difference last year. So 30-0. So a 30-point swing in a year. Pretty wild, Ryan.
It's just kind of speaks to, like I said, the trajectory of what both teams. How they finished last year, how they've looked to start here. Again, Colorado lost by 25 to TCU in the opener, which I think peace and love to our favorite Stats of War on Twitter, Parker. I mean, he's a big TCU guy, but I don't think the Horned Frogs are projected to be much more than a Fringe Bowl team, which rest in peace, MV, and that website. MV's obviously still live, by the way. Which
yeah, he is. Actually, they held a Top Pod, like kind of revisited Spaces last night, which I really enjoyed because I miss Top Pod. It was a really good listen. So I hope that at some point that thing comes back. Okay, but let's get into this game when the Gophers are on offense. On the season, are you ready for this, Ryan?
Oh, I'm well aware.
Are you ready for this? The Gophers on the season are averaging 50 points per game. 582 yards of total offense, 280 through the air, and 302 on the ground. Colorado, conversely, is giving up 39.5 points per game. They're allowing 428 yards of total offense, only 73 through the air, but 355 yards on the ground, Ryan. So what do you expect the Gophers to do on offense on Saturday?
Look, I will tell you right now that the statistics skew how, I mean, they would have you lead you to believe that Colorado is a horrible football team. Now, I don't know that I would go as far as horrible. I think they are incredibly mediocre, but they, I look at the game last week where they went to Air Force. So it's an in-state game for them, Colorado versus Air Force. And I watched that game and I was like, I mean, that game couldn't have gone any better for Air Force. Air Force ended up winning 41-10. Air Force is also a triple option team. And oh, by the way, it was raining. And at points of that game, it was pouring. So you look up and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I'm going to imagine that's going to play right into the hands of a triple option offense, which it did. And oh, by the way, they ran 70 times for 435 yards. Now, I don't take really anything from that game because that's not a normal offense. Now, you can take some stuff from that TCU game in the opener where TCU had to travel up to Boulder and they really turned it on there in the second half. It was a very close game in the first half. Colorado's offense wasn't able to put any points on the board with some long drives. But the way I look at this is it's going to come down to the Minnesota Moving Company again up front. And there's actual living, breathing bodies. When that's said with peace and love to the New Mexico State Aggies and the Western Illinois Leathernecks. But these are Power 5 athletes, and these are Power 5 coaches, and they look a little bit different than what New Mexico State and what Western Illinois threw out there. I mean, these are big bodies. And so to me, it comes down to, I'm going to say it for the third straight game, and I'm going to say it because people are sick of hearing about it. Don't for the third. Again, we've seen the first two games. They didn't play down to the level of a bad opponent at home in the non-conference. We'll do it again because I have a strong inclination that if Minnesota's offense can start out hot and it can be 10 to nothing, 14-3 at the end of the first quarter, there's going to be a lot of on the opposing sideline. Here we go again, because it has not been pretty for that offensive side of the ball. The Colorado defense, in my opinion, has really struggled to set an edge. And I know that we've talked about that at length in that 2020 Gopher season where they were just getting run through. But there are some players, and we'll get to that later in the keys of the game, that Colorado brought in defensively as transfers from West Virginia and I believe Oklahoma. And those two players have played horribly through the first two games, or at least if you ask Pro Football Focus. Of the 29 graded Buffaloes, they are graded 29th and 27th so far. So I think I know where to look in terms of what's happening. But, Luke, if Minnesota is going to continue their hot start offensively, it starts up front. And it's going to be Minnesota's offensive line and tight ends are going to have to establish that running game so Minnesota can continue to take some shots in the passing game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I think you bring up a good point. Every game is its own fixture, right? You can't really necessarily always build on the previous games. You can always kind of build some confidence. But to a certain extent, like if you have trouble, you know, you have to be able to overcome that adversity, right? And what we've seen so far is the Gophers did run into some adversity against Western Illinois and then stuck to the game plan. Now, this is a totally different animal. This isn't an FCS opponent. If they run into some adversity offensively, you know, that's the place I have my biggest concerns. And, you know, two data points is just not enough for me in terms of games to trust that PJ Fleck is going to, you know, commit to this new, to this new approach. But ultimately, I want to see this again where it's like we are going to commit to a style, we are going to commit to a game plan, and we're going to stick with it, right? That's what I want to see mostly out of the offense this week. I want to see Tanner be efficient, and I also want to see them stick to that game plan.
The last thing I would add is to your point there, I literally, figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally asked Kirk Shiraka today. I go, Kirk, after the Michael Brown Stevens fumble on that second play of the game, what was the conversation like between you and the head coach about sticking to the pass? And it was funny because he looks at me and it took a couple seconds and he was like, what do you mean? Like, it was just a normal conversation. Like, I was mad that he fumbled. PJ was mad that we fumbled, but PJ knew we had a game plan and we were going to stick to it. And I was like, he's looking at me like I'm speaking Swahili, yet I think we all know what the elephant in the room here is, and we've talked about it at length on this podcast. It's just so refreshing to see when something goes wrong, like it did last year against Bowling Green, or they stuck with the passing game and they actually got work, you know, they got work done. So I hope to see that here again. But again, it starts on the ground. If you're a Gopher football offense, that never changes, and that's going to start with this offensive line is going to be going against Power 5 athletes, and they need to bring it.
The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. And Ryan, if you want to support Gopher football, we say it time and time and time again, the best way to do that is to be a Goal Line Club member. So if you're interested in supporting Gopher football, and maybe you want to be a booster, go to goallineclub.org and sign up for a membership today. And it comes with some perks, Ryan.
It absolutely does. Now, we mentioned it on the last podcast. You can get some deals at Stub and Herbs, which is, again, one of my favorite joints there in Stadium Village, just right next to the stadium. You get some drink specials. You get some meal specials. We mentioned it already. You get 20% off at the Minnesota Alumni Pop-Up Market before each game. Just identify yourself as a Goal Line Club member, and that discount will be added to the end of your order. So if you have any questions about the Goal Line Club, shoot an email to info@goalineclub.org. Or if you're ready to become a member, like Luke said, 100% of this donation goes directly to PJ Fleck and his Gopher football program. Go to goallineclub.org/memberships and learn more today.
Okay, when the Gophers are on defense, the Buffaloes don't pose a huge threat offensively, but let's take a real quick look at the numbers, Ryan. On the season, the Buffaloes are averaging 11.5 points. They're averaging 255 yards of total offense, 143 through the air, and 112 on the ground. Conversely, the Gophers are only giving up 5 points per game. They are allowing 142.5 yards of total offense, 106 through the air, and only 36.5 on the ground. So, again, it feels kind of like the same story, you know, the defense versus the offense. The Minnesota defense appears statistically to be significantly better, and Colorado appears to be a little bit anemic. So what do you expect to see in this specific game?
I pause here because I am very intrigued to see what a Mike Sanford game plan against Joe Rossi is going to look like. I say that because they obviously know each other very well. They know each other in terms of what each other wants to do. They went against each other for the last 2 years of practice for X amount of practices. And again, when I asked Rossi about it today, or it might have been Randy Johnson, the Star Tribune. It was, you know, what is, you know, you're going against Sanford. He knows you well. You know him well. And Rossi just downplayed it, more or less saying, you know, we play teams every year, and since I've been coaching here, they know my scheme. Mike knows my scheme. You know, Clay Patterson knows it. They know it. He's like, the only difference is they know our personnel a lot better than what everybody else does. So maybe they know what some of our guys can do better than, you know, what some other teams do. But he's like, you know, we'll be prepared. And I'm just thinking to myself, I don't care what those two say in terms of to the media. I can guarantee both of them want to prove something. Now, the issue for Mike Sanford is his offense is dreadful. I mean, it is. I got a text. When you say this,
are you mean like personnel wise, right?
Or I mean largely, but also, I mean, we've seen Sanford's track record now, well, the last six years wherever he goes.
Yeah, do you remember when he started, somehow we came up on the topic of like, what's the one question if you got a freak? Oh, I think it was a listener question. Like, what's one question you'd ask like Mike Sanford? And you had some like very like Gopher centric question. And my question was, how did you screw up Jordan Love?
How'd you screw, you you know, how did you screw up Jordan Love? What went wrong at Western Kentucky?
Yeah.
What, again, the recent track record isn't great, but even I look at like what the personnel is for Colorado's offense, and it's the third straight game to start a season, by the way, where Minnesota is going to be facing potentially two quarterbacks. JT Schrout and Brendan Lewis, I'd argue both of them very mediocre at best. They lost their Pac-12 running back of their offensive player of the year in 2020, Jarek Broussard, to Michigan State. Minnesota will see him next week. But they haven't been able to run the ball. Their skilled position players haven't been very good. Their Baylor transfer and R.J. Sneed, who is an all-conference guy in the Big 12 in 2020, has barely played. It's just, you look up at this, Luke, and they are struggling. Like, I'm talking about now, I will preface this by saying, remember last week's game against Air Force for Colorado was in the rain. But Colorado's only played one of the quarterbacks last week, JT Schrout. Luke, do you want to guess what his completion percentage was on 21 attempts last week?
I would guess it was sub 50%. I'll go 43%.
23%. He completed 5 of 21 passes last week. 5 of 21 for 51 yards. Like, it was dreadful. Now, the question is, which of the two quarterbacks are you going to see? Some of you would say Ryan doesn't matter. They're still bad. And I would say I understand that. But one's more of a mobile guy. One's more of a pocket passer. So I'd argue, yes, it does matter. They got a couple of running backs by the name of Deion Smith and Alex Fontenot that I think are pretty – I mean, I think they're going to be the best tailbacks that Minnesota's faced so far this season. The receivers, they got a true freshman by the name of Daniel Arias, who has been their leading receiver. I think he's going to be a pretty good player in the Pac-12 down the line here. But it's going to be, can R.J. Sneed give them anything? He's only played 24 snaps in two games. It's just, can this Sanford offense stay on the field? Can they sustain drives? Can they move the ball through the air? Because I can guarantee Joe Rossi's thinking to himself, I want to see JT Schrout, who just completed 23% of his passes last week, do it against my defense in Huntington Bank Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to sell out to stop the run. They're going to challenge these Colorado receivers, which, again, they're Power 5 players. These are Power 5 athletes. But it's, can they do it in Huntington Bank Stadium on Saturday? I'm not sure. But it's not, in theory, a great matchup on paper. And the last thing I would note here is I may have gotten a text tonight from a Mountain West coach who is maybe currently game planning against the Air Force Falcons and just watched the Colorado film. He may have texted me and just said, you know, what, the Gophers are going to kill these guys because they are absolutely terrible offensively. Now, I'm not a college football coach that gets paid copious amounts of money, but I'll tell you, he's not the first one that has kind of slid that in, that maybe Colorado's offense has a lot of issues and a lot of it's personnel related. So it is going to be very interesting to see if the Kyler Baughs and the Trill Carters of the world can really wreak havoc for that Colorado offensive line.
You do remember last year, like the running back was injured. I'm trying to remember all the details.
Jarek Broussard was sort of injured, but he also played in that 30-0 game. But it was Brendan Lewis was the quarterback last year,
and it was bad.
And you remember how it was? I don't know what other word I can use to besides sad to like watch that passing offense, because Brendan Lewis, if he's playing, peace and love to that young man, because I'm sure he's given it his heart. But it has been dreadful for him
here.
It's like he's pushing the ball instead of throwing the ball. Now, he is someone that they can use in design quarterback runs and whatnot, whereas JT Schrout is definitely the more talented of the two passers. So again, that's why it matters which quarterback is in the game. But how do they move the ball 8-10 plays against this Gopher defense? I have no idea.
Here's the reason I bring it up, though. Which offense do you think is better between last year and this year? Is Broussard just enough
for Colorado?
Yeah, for Colorado. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't nearly watched enough Colorado tape to know that. I would argue last year's, because they at least had Jarek Broussard.
Yeah, that's
kind of a really good running back.
It's kind of where I lean.
like, I just want to know where the top end talent is, because if RJ Snead's not going to be that guy, where is the big playability going to come from?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, Ryan. Let's see how this Gopher defense, how they fare. In the end, I think it's about, you know, getting work in, number two, and then number two, making sure you stay healthy. And then number three is just not playing down to your opponent, right? Staying on top and just being efficient and staying focused. That is so, so important here. Legacy in Life Law Firm, LLC, brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. For the important times in your life, for the most important people in your life, they will be there for you. Ryan, we know that Brandon takes a lot of pride in being a trusted and steady hand through some of the most important times in his client's life. He has clients, obviously, in Illinois. He can also serve clients now in Minnesota. And he has clients as far north as Roseau. And Ryan, I want to make sure that it's clear. It is Roseau and not Roseville. I know we're both there. But we want to make sure that we're promoting the fact that he has information on his website, legacyandlifelaw.com/GGR, for more on Gopher fans and GGR listeners. And as well, he's promoting a big event. The big event will be a watch party for the Michigan State game at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. That's in Illinois. And they'll have some appetizers as well as a raffle for a signed Chris Ottman Bell crab t-shirt to support Gopher NIL efforts. So if you are looking for any reason to update your will, maybe your estate, maybe you're going to do some business planning, whatever, reach out to a Legacy and Life Law Firm, LLC. Okay, Ryan, before we get into your keys to the game and some statistics, we opted to gloss over the injuries, one, because we don't have a depth chart. We will constantly complain about the lack of depth chart. I imagine you have your own personal depth chart on GopherIllustrated.com, which people should check out. But let's get into injuries. What do we have coming into this game?
The only two I'm really monitoring, more or less, I guess three would be running back Zach Evans. It looked like he has taken a step forward in his recovery, at least from what I've gleaned from the press box warmups the last 2 weeks, which you can't get this type of reporting anywhere else, folks, if I'm going to be honest here. But he did not have a wrap on his leg, which he had the first week, and prior to the Western Illinois game, he didn't have that. He was moving around a lot better. So while I don't anticipate seeing him in this game, or in any, hopefully any more of the games, because I want to see a lot of Mo Ibrahim and Trey Potts. Looks like he's on the mend. But the two ones to really watch here, one on the offense would be Daniel Jackson. Is this the game that he's finally back? We've seen him warm up before the first two games. I would argue he looked a lot better in terms of being able to plant and explode off that ankle that he injured in fall camp prior to the Western Illinois game compared to the New Mexico State game. Will Minnesota continue to be cautious with him to hold him out for the Michigan State game, or will they give him some snaps to kind of break him in for the Michigan State game here this weekend? I can confirm that he has been practicing. So I think it's going to come down to what percent do they think he's at Saturday morning, and do they want to get him some snaps? The other one would be Austin Booker, someone who had a hand injury, kind of a freak injury, happened just before that New Mexico State game. Well, sources tell me that he has been practicing the last couple of days with contact, and I'm guessing he's going to be good to go. And that's where I would love to see him mix in on some of those passing downs with Danny Strigow just to get his feet wet, because I do think Austin Booker is going to be someone that Minnesota is going to have to count on for 10, 15 snaps a game this year. Again, he can flash some pass rush, and we've seen Minnesota's been able to get some pressure, but they haven't been able to get the quarterback on the ground. So all things considered, Luke, going into game three of the season, they are pretty healthy right now.
All right, so for this game, just some facts and figures real quickly. This game is on ESPN2. It is a 2:30 kick at Huntington Bank Stadium. If you have a betting interest in this game, which at this point, don't listen to us because you lost all your money. the Gophers are a 27.5-point favorite. They're a minus 10,000 on the money line. And the over-under is 47. On the season, Colorado is 0-2. They are 0-2-0 against the spread, and Minnesota is 2-0, and they are 2-0-0 against the spread. A real quick look at the weather, being this will be an outdoor game at Huntington Bank Stadium. The kickoff will be about 2:30. The temperature should be about 77 degrees, wind being very minimal, about 5 miles an hour. Humidity will be a little bit up. It's with the dew point in the mid-60s. The sun will be setting about 7:22, so it won't be dark at the end of the game, but assuming that, you know, the end of the game is somewhere around 6:30, the temperature will actually still be about 77 or 78 degrees, the dew point ticking up a little bit. So it's going to be a little bit muggy, and maybe a little bit muggy feeling, but all in all, a really good day for football. Doesn't look like there should be much precipitation that should impact this game. That can change. We're recording this on a Wednesday, but right now it doesn't look like the weather should play a big factor.
No, I would tell you that this is a game where you're going to want to check Saturday morning before you leave to come down to campus what the weather is going to do. I can tell you that from watching the weather tonight, the current weather report 72 hours out would say there is a high likelihood of rain by the time you get home from this game. So probably 7-8 o'clock on overnight. But it looks like the rain's going to hold off until after the game. As Luke said, there's going to be some humidity in here. But I would also mention that this is probably going to be your last quote-unquote warm weather game of the non-conference slate or just of the Gopher football season, because next week the Gophers will be in Michigan State, and then they come back for that Purdue game. And from someone who's been monitoring the forecast with the archery deer opener this weekend, Luke, which good luck to anybody who's going out there in 80-something degrees, the floor is going to start to drop out about a week from today. And they're talking highs in the mid-60s here going into next weekend, and it's probably going to stay there. So if you are trying to convince somebody to come check out a Gopher football game, you know that they might be a little bit of a freeze baby. Well, this is going to be the game for them, where I don't anticipate a lot of sun in your eyes. I would anticipate, like Luke said, 78 degrees, some humidity, but I don't think the weather should play a large role here.
All right, so let's get to your keys to the game, Ryan. What do the Gophers need to do to come out victorious against the Colorado Buffaloes?
First thing I would say is don't give Mike Sanford's struggling offense any hope. Now, you're asking yourself, what year is this and what team are you talking about? And I would say, wow, you're a savage. But I am pretty hyped to see this Joe Rossi defense versus former Minnesota offensive coordinator Mike Sanford in the Colorado offense. And I know. On paper, it doesn't look like a great matchup for the Buffaloes, as we saw last week in college football, though. That's why they play the games. This is a Colorado offense that has been driving and captaining the struggle bus for the first 2 weeks of the season. They just mustered 13 points at home in their season opener against TCU and only 10 points last week in a rainy game against Air Force. Now, a change in play callers happened over the course of the offseason. That's why Mike Sanford is now there. It was expected, I would say, to provide more variety, be more challenging for opposing defenses like Minnesota to game plan against, and they would have, in theory, a more experienced quarterback in either Brennan Lewis, who started a lot of games for them last year, or a healthy JT Schrout behind center. It was expected to raise the level of competition and play throughout the entire offense, but through two games, Luke, it looks completely inept. They rank 129th out of 130 FBS teams in total offense. The passing game for the Colorado Buffaloes has combined for 286 yards in two games. I would remind you, Tanner Morgan, I believe, threw for more than that last week, and if he didn't, the rest of the Gopher quarterbacks did. It's also not any better on the ground. They've only managed 224 rushing yards in two games. But if I'm Rossi and I'm preparing to see Sanford, I expect Mike Sanford to throw the kitchen sink this weekend and try to get as cute as Western Illinois did last week, because, yes, Sanford knows the personnel in the Rossi scheme. He went against it every day for two seasons. But I think Sanford knows he's got to try to do something to jumpstart this offense. So I would absolutely, without question, anticipate a flea flicker, a double reverse pass, something or another. We definitely saw a flea flicker in Mike Sanford's time here as the Minnesota offensive coordinator, but they're going to have to try some weird things to try and move the ball. After watching the first two games, I mentioned it earlier, I am not impressed at all with JT Schroud or Brendan Lewis. Brendan Lewis is the better athlete of the two quarterbacks. He's the mobile one. And if he's in the game, Sanford will try to do some design quarterback runs with him. But throwing the ball is absolutely an adventure. JT Schroud is the better passer of the two, but he has had a hell of a time to start the season. I mean, the poor man just completed 23% of his passes last week. He's got a 40% completion percentage on the year. It's been a struggle with those two quarterbacks. I mentioned the tailbacks, Deion Smith and Alex Fontenot. I think they're going to be the two best running backs Minnesota's played so far this year. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Colorado Buffalo tight end Brady Russell is a poor man's Co-Keef in the run game. So Minnesota's linebackers are going to get a better test there. But for Rossi's defense, it's the same recipe every game. Stop the run first and don't give up any big plays. Luke mentioned it in the opening. Minnesota's only allowed 73 rushing yards through their first two games. That's good enough for second in the Big Ten. And if we know anything about a Mike Sanford offense, ladies and gentlemen, he's going to want to establish the run. So when Minnesota stops that, I'm very curious to see how the Colorado offense can sustain drives for 8, 9, 10 plays to score. And if they do that, Godspeed, because they deserve to be in the game and they'll have a chance to win. But I preface it by saying that the Buffaloes had 14 offensive drives last week, Luke. None of them lasted longer than 7 plays. It's not great when you have 14 drives that you average starting on your own 35 and you only result in 10 points. So if you're Joe Rossi, stop the run, get after the passer, and good things should happen. Now, I'd say the second key to the game is you have to continue to establish the physicality on the offensive line. Minnesota has run the ball at will in their first two contests, but peace and love once again to the New Mexico State Aggies and the Western Illinois Leathernecks. They're not going to be good football teams in 2022. Now, you can argue Colorado's in that same boat. They likely won't make a bowl game, but I will remind you, there is absolutely a step up from Western Illinois athletes, New Mexico State's athletes, to Colorado's athletes. These are Power 5 coaches, Power 5 athletes running around. So it's going to be a step up in level of competition for Brian Callahan's unit. Now, Colorado has put a lot of eggs into the transfer basket. They brought in Josh Chandler Cimito, who led West Virginia in tackles last season, and then former Oklahoma linebacker Robert Barnes. They put a ton of eggs into those two baskets, and those two guys have struggled mightily in the first two games. I mentioned it. Those two gentlemen ranked 27th and 29th out of 29 Colorado qualifiers on defense, according to Pro Football Focus. That's not good. And it probably explains a lot about why the Buffaloes are struggling so badly to stop the run. Now, I am incredibly curious as well to see how a Colorado defense assimilates back to playing a air quote normal offense. Now, I asked Daniel House this because I didn't know if he had done a study. I just assume House has done every study known to man about football. But I wonder if there is going to be a letdown or a lag effect for Colorado's defense, because they go from playing a normal offense in the opener in TCU to then playing a triple option offense, which if you talk to any defensive coaches in your life, they would tell you the principles and the keys there are so much different that they're trying to instill in their players to read than what a modern offense looks like, and that's what Minnesota's is. So I wonder if there's going to be a step in play. But regardless of that, Brian Callahan's offense, Brian Callahan's offensive line, Kirk Soraka's offense, they're just not going to be able to overwhelm Colorado because of their size. They were able to do that in the first two games. So it's got to return to technique for them, physicality for them. Minnesota's got to be able to run the ball to set up their shot passing game. I expect to see Minnesota try to get their outside zone game going early on. I mentioned it. I'm not an elite football mind by any means, but I noticed that Colorado was struggling to set an edge the first two games. So I want to see it with the guys up front. And lastly, Luke, start the dang game fast. If Colorado is in this game in the second half, something went wrong. And it's probably because Minnesota's offense is struggling to put the ball in the end zone. The defense has given up some chunk plays, probably because of some trickeration. So if I'm Kirk Ciarrocco, the number one thing I want to do is get the ball in the end zone on the first few drives. That allows you to lean on the run, but it's also going to open up things in that play action game as Colorado commits more bodies to the box. But also for Rossi's defense, if they can suffocate that Sanford offense early, I mentioned it. I expect to see some, well, here we go again, as this Colorado team has struggled to move the ball with any consistency in the first two games. They've struggled to score points. And this, you want this to be a game where Colorado's quarterbacks are throwing it 35-plus times, as there's going to be a lot of opportunities for turnover. So, Luke, start fast and get a lead early.
All right, a reminder that it's an over-under of 47. Minnesota is favored by 27.5. Ryan, I think that the Gophers clean out the non-conference slate undefeated, and I will take the Gophers. I'll take them 35-7. I'll take the under.
All right. So I would remind people, because
I've taken the under every time it's got a hit.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm learning anything, people are actually taking our betting advice, which I would tell you, I am 1-1 with my score predictions here against the spread, or excuse me, in terms of the over under, I'm 0-2 against the spread. So, you know, take what you will for what I have to say here. Now, what's the over under at right now? Is it 47.5?
I see 47, but you might be able to get 47.5 somewhere.
Oh man. Well, my score is 47, so that's not going to help anybody, but you know, I want to believe this is another large margin of victory, as the Buffaloes are really not in a good place right now. I mean, you've been blown out the first two games. There's a lot of fans and media potentially saying that the seat's getting hotter and hotter under Carl Dorrell's, you know, tenure for the Buffaloes. They just, you know, that's a Colorado defense that was just on the field for 74 plays last week. Here's where I'm at, Luke. If Colorado gets points early, this could be a lot closer game than many people want.
Definitely.
But I just have so little confidence that Mike Sanford's offense is going to be able to move the ball consistently against Rossi's defense, and that Colorado is going to be able to stop Mo Ibrahim for 60 minutes. So I'm going to say Minnesota gets out of the non-conference undefeated, setting up that massive showdown with the Michigan State Spartans, number 9 ranked in the country as we currently sit here in time. I got Minnesota 34, Colorado 13. So depending on where you find it, again, I know that if you look at stats of war, I mean, he thinks it's an easy over. Now, if this game continues to slide, I don't know what you want to do. I don't know that I can see Minnesota covering here. It all depends upon, Luke, how much confidence do you have in Mike Sanford?
Right.
You know, again, I don't see this as a game where Minnesota is going to be able to play their second stringers in it. I just think that Power 5 athletes are Power 5 athletes. I mean, we saw last week how Washington State, as 3 touchdown underdogs, beat Madison. And again, I don't think that happens here this week, as evident by my score prediction, but I have a lot more faith in Power 5 coaches and Power 5 athletes. So I'm going to say Colorado plus 27.5. And my score prediction is 47. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Ryan, we hear a lot from Gopher Gridiron Radio listeners that they love the Burns Insurance Agency, and there were a number that were upset that they couldn't get it because they were in different states. And the reality is, we had a bad ad, Ryan, because there are a number of people that can get insurance by Burns.
Yes, if you are thinking to yourself, boy, I've heard these Insurance by Burns ads for years, and I'm not in the state of Minnesota, and I'm so distraught that I can't get outstanding rates and outstanding service. Well, I would remind you of this. The Burns Insurance Agency is not only licensed in Minnesota, it's licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Florida, and Utah. And you're thinking to yourself now, boy, I live in one of those states. I've got auto, home, commercial insurance, and I want to make sure that a Gopher fan can give me the best insurance at the best price. So if you do want to learn more, go to insurancebyburns.com. or email him at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Let's wrap up with a little Big Ten talk, Ryan, previewing this week's games. So there are, let's see, 5 11 a.m. games. For my money, I am most interested here in the Purdue-Syracuse game. I don't know about you. Michigan-UConn doesn't really do anything for me. Oklahoma-Nebraska, maybe. Southern Illinois-Northwestern, nothing. You can get into that game for $2. And then...
wait, $2?
That's what it says here on ESPN's little ticket deal.
Holy cow.
$2, Ryan Field. And then Western Kentucky-Indiana, it doesn't really do anything for me. I do want to talk a little bit about this Purdue-Syracuse game. In the preseason, you know, we sort of assumed that Syracuse wasn't going to be much of a squad. They actually hold they're going to be a 1-point favorite in this game, over under of 60. I do think this is a pretty big game for the Boilermakers. And Syracuse, definitely kind of defying expectations. Do you know about Barber's definitely putting together a formidable season thus far?
Mark Coyle hired Dino Babers to you.
Luke. Yeah, I know. I always want to call him Barbers, but it's Babers. I always screw that up. But that's
Closet Syracuse fan. I have lot of family. Yeah, I have a lot of family in that upstate New York area, Finger Lakes area. Like, my grandmother was a diehard
Donovan McNabb guy. Big Donovan McNabb guy.
She was a big Jim Boeheim guy. She loved to watch Syracuse men's basketball.
She loves some big, long 2-3 zone.
I've got a couple of t-shirts that are Syracuse Orangemen here in the closet from family members over the years. Nice. But I am very curious to see, because you mentioned it, this game is essentially a pick'em. Syracuse is a 1-point home favorite. Syracuse, I mean, they steamrolled Louisville by 24 points. They just beat the doors off of UConn. UConn sucks, though. Peace and love to you, Jim Mora. But I love this game. I mean, I didn't think that Purdue was really going to get tested again after that Penn State game, because last week they played Indiana State 56-0. They play FAU next week. That's not going to be much of a test for them. But having to travel to Syracuse, I also think, is the interesting part of this. So, yes, I am absolutely keyed in on this game. Minnesota's got Purdue on the schedule here just in a few weeks. So,
all right. So, there are four kind of what I would call afternoon games, Rutgers and Temple at 1, Penn State and Auburn at 2:30. That game's on CBS. Obviously, Minnesota and Colorado, that game's on ESPN2. And then the Fighting Jerry Kills and are visiting Wisconsin at 2:30. So, you know, not exactly the easiest non-conference slate for Mr. Kill. Cheapest game to get in there would be $16 at Wisconsin.
I mean, none of these games truly interest me. If I had to pick one, I'd go back to an 11 a.m. slot to tell you how much I think about this 2:30 slot. But I am very interested to see what Nebraska looks like. Again, you get rid of Scott Frost, and it's been very interesting to hear some of the Nebraska media starting to air the dirty laundry about Scott Frost there, in terms of him just constantly showing up late to meetings.
Yeah.
The assistant coaches going to the athletic department administration saying, "What is Scott Frost doing? You need to help me." Again, it's a breath of fresh air for a program that now gets to play their next 9 games with nothing to lose. Like, they have no one has any expectations for you now. Now you get to play the Oklahoma Sooners at home.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Oklahoma ranks 6th in the country, but it's a brand new head coach. I am very intrigued to see, is it going to be Nebraska's defense is still a sieve, or can they actually show a pulse defensively? It's just another game at that 11 a.m. slot that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I have a little bit of interest in the New Mexico State-Wisconsin game, just because you have a reference point between Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm also curious in the Rutgers-Temple game, just a tiny bit, just to see, you know, Rutgers teams to do well in the non-conference. Temple's had some success in the past. So I'm just kind of curious to see where Rutgers is at with maybe a little bit more formidable opponent relative to what they've played thus far. Otherwise, let's take a look at the evening games. 4 of them on the docket, Ryan. Toledo at Ohio State, that game's on Fox. Michigan State at Washington. A 6:30 game on ABC, Nevada at Iowa, and then SMU at Maryland. Cheapest game there would be SMU at Maryland. The clear winner in for me for game of the week is Michigan State at Washington on ABC. Last I looked, I'll take a quick look here too, but last I looked, Washington is still a 3.5-point favorite at home with a 56.5 over under, Ryan. I do think that this will be a close game. I think on the surface, though, the fact that Michigan State's number 11 and is a dog on the road at Washington is a little hard for people to comprehend.
My answer would be, should Michigan State be number 9 in the country then?
That's where I'm at. I just think that they're maybe a little overrated, but I don't know.
If they're facing an unranked team and they're an underdog, they are right now. As we sit here Wednesday night, Washington is a 3.5-point home favorite.
And basically what Vegas is saying is it's a pick'em game. Washington's played nobody, right? They've literally played Kent State, and I'm blanking on the team.
Portland State last year.
Yeah. But I mean, then again, I wouldn't say that Michigan State has played a terribly difficult schedule. Western Michigan is probably fine, but Akron's nothing to write home about. In the end too, you know, in the passing game, it still seems to look like if they've got vulnerabilities, Michigan State's more vulnerable in the pass game. They're not giving up a lot, but they haven't played a ton of people either. So I am curious to see just generally how this goes. And we know that Washington wants to throw the ball. So,
That's where it's just there. I think there's three interesting games. Once you get home from the Gopher game that you can switch between this Michigan State one, number one, because Minnesota plays them next week, but Michigan State's got to go on the road to Washington. And can they get out of there alive? We're going to find out. But they're at least going to play a high level of competition that Minnesota's going to get a game film on. Mm-hmm. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that also at 6:30 p.m. is the Iowa Hawkeyes versus the Nevada Wolfpack.
Yes.
It is.
It's appointment television for you, we know.
It is a completely inept Nevada defense that just allowed 55 points to something called Incarnate Word. And it is the Iowa Hawkeye offense that couldn't move the ball to save their life. And my question is this, Luke, if we're getting to the end of the first quarter of that game and Iowa still got no points, what are the Iowa faithful going to do?
Yeah.
Because Kirk Ferentz has doubled down on Spencer Petras, which is completely mind-boggling to me. No changes. If Iowa can't score, Iowa's going to win this game. Look. They're 23-point favorites. They have a really good defense and special teams. But it's like, what if this game ends up 27-3 and you really didn't learn anything other than Iowa's defense probably gets a special teams, you know, block punt touchdown because that's what happens for them. They get a defensive touchdown and they get like 5 field goals. It's like, how can you feel any better, Kirk Ferentz? So I am going to be keeping an eye on that game. And then, Luke, don't sleep on the Maryland versus SMU game. This is a 2.5-point spread, over under of 73.5.
I didn't look at that. That's incredible.
Both teams are averaging over 43 points a game. Both teams are averaging over 500 yards of total offense a game. Again, I don't sleep on those Dallas SMU boys who, again, they have played the Little Sisters of the Poor in North Texas and Lamar to start their season. I think Maryland's going to have themselves a test here. So, we mentioned it. There's a couple of games at 11 a.m. before the Gophers come on. If you're staying at home, that you can keep an eye on Big Ten-wise. There's not a lot going on, in my opinion, at 2:30 other than that Penn State-Auburn game. But there's a few games on Saturday night that I'm definitely going to be tuned into once I get done writing on Gopher Illustrated.
All right. I don't know if I told you the dilemma that my family has here. So everybody loves the Huskies, right? That's just a fact. Families from out there. My mother went to the University of Washington. A lot of my family went to the University of Washington. So everybody loves them. But obviously, my dad and I are diehard Gopher fans. I have some other relatives that are diehard Michigan State fans. And so obviously, I'm going to be cheering for the Huskies against Michigan State. And the family that's the Michigan State fans isn't going to like that. they typically will cheer for the Gophers when the Gophers are playing some, you know, someone else, but then we're going to have to go head to head. So they're just going to get toppled on by my family because the Washington fans are going to cheer for the Gophers over the Michigan State fans. So a house divided for a couple of weeks here, Ryan. A house divided.
I don't envy you, Mr. Buehr. I do not envy you.
All right. So thank you all for listening to Gopher Gridiron Radio. We appreciate your support. We love interacting with you both on Twitter and GI. So make sure to reach out. Again, please support the people that support us, the Goal Line Club. Also support Burns Insurance and Life and Legacy, or Legacy and Life Law LLC. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.